Our lesson today is found in the second book of Samuel, chapter 11 and 12. We find in the beginning of the 11th chapter that as the year had expired and it was the time that kings went forth to battle, that David sent Joab and the host and all Israel with him to destroy the Ammonites and to besiege Rabbah. David himself tarried still in Jerusalem. These people, the Ammonites, they had treated David's ambassadors so shamefully when he had sent them to him. The king of the Ammonites had died, and his son became king in his stead, and David had sent his ambassadors to comfort this son. And his son had been spoken to by others that David had not sent them for this reason, but he had sent them to spy out the country. And therefore they took these ambassadors that David had sent, and they cut their beards off, and they cut their clothes off to the buttocks. They treated them very shamefully. And from this occasion, a war began between the Ammonites and the Israelites. The Ammonites hired the Syrians, and they helped the Ammonites, but David and his army were victorious over the Ammonites and the Syrians. And in this chapter, David continues to pursue this war. He sent his whole host and all Israel to this place. They destroyed the Ammonites, and they besieged their capital city called Rabbah. This city is an ancient city. It was a noted city in the time of Moses. But at the present time, it's a city that's been destroyed and it's lying in ruins. This city was prophesied against by Jeremiah and by Ezekiel. Ezekiel prophesied that this city would become a stable for camels. And a traveler going through the ruins of this city found it to be just as Ezekiel had prophesied, that the Arabs had made stables in the ruins and put their camels therein. This city held out a long time against even the Israelites, but finally they were subdued and they were brought under subjection under them. And now what happened likewise with David not going forth with his army was something unusual. He usually went, and usually he was victorious. But at this present time, he remained in Jerusalem. Had he been in the way of duty, then he would have escaped this temptation. And when we are out of the way of duty, then we are liable to temptation. If we are in the right way, in God's way, we may beseech him to protect us and to keep us. But if we go out of the way, we know not what Satan might do with us. So it was with David. He did not go with his army. He stayed in Jerusalem. And we find that he was lying on his bed. Probably after he had eaten his dinner, he went to lie down. And as it got near eventide, he arose from his bed. And he walked on the top of the roof of the king's house. Idleness, likewise, is very good for the tempter to come in with his temptations. So it was here David was idling away the time. He rose and went up on the top of the roof. David was accustomed when they were at war to go to God in secret and pray to God. We read in one of the Psalms that at noon, at evening, and at morning, I will pray. David, at this present time, I believe, was not in the praying frame. David was being more or less blessed by God with prosperity. He was king. He was lifted up on the throne. And I believe that his religious devotions and his exercises were very far gone at this present time. It wasn't as it had been in times past. And now he was walking up on the top of the roof of this house, and he saw a woman washing herself. And the woman was very beautiful to look upon. But we know that Eve in the paradise, when she was in this glorious place, she likewise was brought to sin by a wandering eye. She looked at the tree. The tree had beautiful fruit upon it. And when she saw the fruit thereof, she lusted after the fruit, and she took of the fruit, and she gave unto her husband, and he did eat with her. In this way, sin entered into the world. So was here David, when he looked and saw this woman washing herself. She probably had exposed herself, and he saw that she was very beautiful. He could have not been too far away from her to see this. And in this way, his eye caught her, lust conceived within, his passions were aroused, and he desired to have this woman. He had plenty of wives, he had plenty of concubines. This man David, he had, whenever he had any desire for a woman who was single, who was not married, he just took her and she became his concubine. Nobody ever told him anything about it. Nobody ever denied him this. And now he sent word to find out who this woman was. And word came back that she was Bathsheba. She was the wife of Uriah the Hittite. Now this should have immediately deterred him from going any further in this matter. He had plenty of wives. Why should he take somebody else's wife? But we find that sin was so strong, his passion so inflamed, that he sent for her. And he fetched her to his house. And he lay with her. He then committed that sin which God hath given us in his commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery. David, you know, was a man after God's own heart. He had composed many psalms about the law of God. We have it too. The meditation of God's law was his chief delight. And David at this time had not this law on his mind. So this commandment did not rise up before him. For he sent for her and he committed this sin, adultery. Adultery is an awful sin, my hearers. A man that commits adultery lacks understanding, the Bible says. And a man that commits it, he will receive a wound and a dishonor, and the reproach of it shall never be taken away. Now, this is so true in life. When things like this happen, and persons fall into this sin, they bring a blot upon their name, upon their character, which is never taken away. They bear it the rest of their life. What a blessing if we are kept in this respect from this sin. We are sinners, every one of us, and we know not how soon we might fall into a sin as David did. A man after God's own heart, a man that had so much communion and fellowship with his Maker, that he fell in this way. My hearers, who can understand it? It proves to us that even sin at times is more powerful than the divine nature that God implants in his children's breast. David then fell into this sin, and the woman went back to her home, and she soon sent word back to him that she had conceived and that she was with child. This was another thing that David had not expected, probably. Had he expected it, in all probabilities, he had spoken to her concerning it, that if it did happen, well, he would protect her. And now he received word that she was with child. Sin is a downhill way. Sin brings troubles with it. And this was a trouble too that David was confronted with. What should he do? And now the devil put into his mind another plan. This man, Uriah the Hittite, was one of his foremost officers, a faithful man, an upright man, a virtuous man. And this man was at the battlefront. And now Bathsheba, she was a virtuous woman until this happened, till David brought her into this temptation, and she fell into it. And likewise, David, he was a man after God's own heart, a God-fearing man, and he fell. And now what should he do? How should he get out of this trouble? The devil put this plan in his mind. So he sent to the battlefront to Joab and said, "Send me Uriah the Hittite." So Joab, the general, he consented and he sent this man back to David. And David had in his mind now to put the blame on Uriah so that when this child would be born, it would not be his, it would be Uriah's. He brought then this man back from the battlefront on a pretense that he wanted to speak to him about how the war was progressing. He inquired of him concerning Joab and concerning the army and concerning how far they had progressed with this war. Another lie, another deceit. You see how the devil was leading this man, David, from one sin to another. And after he had spoken to him, he told him to go down to his house and to wash his feet. And this man, Uriah the Hittite, he went out of David's house. And David, he sent a mess of meat down to Uriah's house. This was supposed to be a present. But this man, Uriah, he had made a vow, he had made a resolution that he would not go down to his house. He could not see that he, of all the soldiers, had been chosen to come home and that he was permitted by the king even to go down and to eat and to drink and to lie with his wife. He made a vow that he was not going to do that. And he didn't. He slept at the door of the king's house with the rest of David's servants. These servants were the guards that were around David's house, protecting the king from being murdered by probably enemies. And this man, Uriah, then he slept there that night. And now the next morning it was told David that Uriah had not went down to his house, but had slept at the door of the king's house with the rest of his servants. This David had not expected. But David had thought that he had went down to his house. And in this way, David was going to cover his sin and plant it upon this man, Uriah. But he didn't go. He who trieth to cover his sin, it'll never work. God is not mocked. Whenever a sinner tries to cover his sins, God will expose them. These sins that David was falling into, they likewise would be brought out by God himself. And this man, then, Uriah, he was called by David the next morning to come into him. And he questioned him and said, "When you came from your journey, why didn't you go down to your house?" "Well," he says, "the ark," he says, "and the men of Israel and Joab and the soldiers, they are all encamped in tents in the open field. And shall I go down to my house," he says, "and wash my feet and eat and lie with my wife? As thou livest and as thy soul liveth," he says, "I shall not do this thing." Here we have a faithful soldier, one that was more or less proud to be in the army, and he was likewise faithful to his king and to his country. He thought more of this than he did of the pleasures that David wanted him to enjoy. And he refused to go down to his house. And David, he was in a quandary again, what to do. He had not expected this, and this was something that he thought, well, he should have obeyed the king. The king sent him home, but he didn't. He didn't go. So now the king, he told him to tarry yet that day in Jerusalem and the next, and then he would send him back. So he invited him into his house, and he set meat and drink before him, and he made him drunk. David then is guilty again of another sin, causing a person to become drunk. He made him drunk to benumb his senses, to get his mind off his oath, so that this man in his drunkenness would go back to his house and lie with his wife, so that his sin would be covered, David. Terrible thing for anybody to make anybody drunk. He who sets a glass before his neighbor to make him drunk, God will visit him with a cup of trembling, the Bible says. That this sin is so prevalent even in these weeks that we are living in. We find so many neighbors even, and so many in places of employment, they have parties at Christmas time, and they set the glass before their neighbor, their fellow worker, and they make them drunk. Drunkenness is a sin spoken of in the Bible, and a drunkard will never enter into the kingdom of heaven, the Bible says. Still, the sin of drunkenness can be forgiven. It is better to be drunk as those were upon the day of Pentecost, who were accused of being drunk, but they were drunk by the Spirit of God, of these apostles on that memorial day. As the apostle says, be not drunk with wine wherein is excess, but be filled with the Spirit. All my hearers, may God keep you likewise from these two sins that I've been speaking about, adultery, and likewise the sin of becoming drunk. Oh, we are so apt to indulge and overindulge in drink even when it's put to us. And when we have it for free and we don't have to pay for it. But then some people, they just drink it down. And a person that's drunk, he knows not what he's doing. This is what David was trying to do with this man. And although he became drunk, he still stuck to his vow. He still stuck to his resolution that he had made. For that very night, he didn't go home. He went to the same place, and he slept with the servants at the door of the king's house. The next day, David sent him back to Joab. Now the devil put something into the mind of David which would relieve David and relieve Bathsheba likewise. He put it into his mind to put him away, saying, if he's killed and he's out of the way, then you'll be free of the revenge of Uriah, and likewise, you'll be free to marry her, and you can have her forever. This is what the devil put into his mind. So David, he sat down, and he writes a letter. And in this letter, he writes to Joab that he should set Uriah the Hittite in the forefront of the hottest battle, and that when the battle was at its hottest, they should retire from him and let him be killed. This is what he wrote. Murder! Plain murder. David, he likewise put this in an envelope, probably, and he gave it to this man, Uriah, to carry back to Joab. This faithful warrior who was for his country and for his king, who was a brave man and should have been honored and should have been rewarded for his bravery, and this is the way he was going to be rewarded, and that by his own king. His own king wrote his death sentence and sent it in his own hand to Joab. My hearers, Uriah, in this respect, is a type of you and I. We have been sentenced to by a king greater than David. We have been sentenced to die. Not only naturally, not only spiritually, but eternally. This sentence came upon us in the day that Eve ate of the fruit and Adam with her. In the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. And this sentence is upon you and I. For this man, Uriah, he had to carry this sentence, unknown to him, to Joab. He didn't know that in that letter that he was doomed to die, and soon. You and I hear that we are doomed to die, but we don't know either the time when we're going to die. We are sentenced to die. Death is certain, and the hour is very uncertain. And this sentence may come upon us unexpectedly, as it does with so many in life. God sometimes sends, before that this takes effect naturally, he sometimes sends sicknesses. And by these sicknesses, we are brought to realize that we are creatures that must die. Death sometimes stares us in the face. The sentence is brought home. For that, there's no cure for this disease. We must die. But then we have a sentence of death standing against us when we are in a condition like this. We, as creatures, we put this sentence from us. We put the day of death, the hour of it, far from us. Likewise, we do not like to think about it. But God brings it to our minds sometimes. And it's a mercy, my hearers, if in this life God brings the sentence of death upon us in a spiritual sense. We all love pleasure. By nature, we follow the ways of sin. And we care not about God or about eternity or about what's going to happen with us after we die. But when God comes with his Spirit and brings home his holy law to our conscience and begins to convict us of sin, then we begin to die. We begin to die to all the pleasures of time and sense. We can't go along with sin any longer. But we shun it. We realize that continuing on in those things, death is certain, and the punishment of sin, too, is certain. And as we go on in this, we attempt to reform ourselves, to make ourselves better. That we make vows and resolutions, and we shun sin, and we spurn it. And we attempt to please God with our own works. And God sends another death blow. He brings an end to this trying to build up righteousness in his sight that would be acceptable unto him. He brings us to that place where we are lost, where we despair of ever being saved and into anything of ourselves. Then we have the sentence of death brought home in its full force to us. And when this takes place by hearers, it pleases God to reveal a way of escape in the person of his dear son, Jesus, who came into this world and took this sentence upon him of every one of God's elect people. This precious Jesus, he bore this sentence for everyone whose name is written in the Lamb's Book of Life in his body while he was here below, and especially when he hung upon the cross. Especially when God hid his face from him for 3 hours, hanging between heaven and earth as a curse for cursed sinners. When he cried out, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And so truly as the form of the Lord's Supper speaks, so that we, who have our names in the Lamb's Book of Life, who have been born again, should be accepted of God and never be forsaken of him. For the apostle speaks about this sentence of death, that he had the sentence of death in himself, that he should not trust in anything else but God, who had delivered him from such a great death, and still doth deliver, and who he expected would deliver. What a mercy, my hearers, if we have been delivered from such a great death, that state in which we are all in by nature, dead in trespasses and sins. What a death to be delivered from, to be quickened, to be made alive, to be born again, to have a life in us that shall never die. Oh, it is of grace and of grace only that this takes place. And many times after this hath taken place, we come into such states that we feel so dead, so lifeless, as if this event that I'm speaking about had never happened. Oh, we have no sign of it anymore, no taste of it, no feeling of it anymore. And we think that it was all wrong, that it was not of God. And when we are in this state, it pleases God again to come and to quicken and to enliven, to raise us up out of this state of death in which we are in spiritually. And the apostle expected likewise that when he died and was buried, that great day would come when God would again rise him from the dead, and then he would enter into that glorious state of eternal life, never, never, no more to die. Uriah had this sentence in an envelope, and he carried it faithfully to Joab. His commentary says, some of these men that have written these commentaries, they believed that he surmised that there was something wrong, that he thought that David had been guilty and that he knew what David had done. Now, whether he did or not, he didn't open the envelope. He was a faithful soldier. He carried his own death warrant to Joab. And when Joab received this letter, Joab, who was a man that would disagree with the king if he didn't think it was right, he wasn't afraid to talk to the king. He wasn't afraid to tell him that he was wrong if he was wrong. But when he received this, it does not seem that as if he questioned why David wanted Uriah put out of the way, which is a surprise. For Joab was involved in this too. My hearers, when David wrote this letter, he became a murderer, not only of Uriah, but he became a murderer of those likewise that were at the side of Uriah and that fell with him. For this Joab, he didn't question the king upon this account. He probably thought that the king had sent for Uriah, and Uriah had probably been guilty of some crime, and he had examined him, and he had found him to be guilty of it, and therefore he wanted him done out of the way. Now Joab knew that David was a God-fearing man. He knew that he was a good king, and that why he wanted this man put out of the way in this way, he should have questioned it, but he didn't. He examined where they were fighting, and he put this man, Uriah, in the hottest place where the fighting was taking place, where there were valiant men. And now, when this took place, these men, these Ammonites, they came out of the city, and they fought against these men of David, the servants of David. And they were upon them, and some shot at them from the top of the wall. And some of the servants of David fell, and Uriah the Hittite, he died also. This then took place because David requested it. David then was the murderer of all those that were at the side of Uriah. He had requested that he be put in the forefront of the hottest battle and that they should retire from him. In other words, when the fighting was at its hottest, then these other men, they should retire from this man Uriah and let him be killed. But others were killed with him. He didn't die alone. See in this how guilty that David was of this commandment, thou shalt not kill. Oh, he knew the commandments very good, my hearers. But this commandment did not trouble him when he wrote this letter. No, he was so benumbed and so under the influence of sin and of Satan that he sent this word to Joab to have this man Uriah put out of the way. And now Joab, he sent a messenger back to David to tell him just how the war had went and what had happened to this man Uriah. He told the messenger that he should go back and tell David all about the war, and that if David got angry and began to speak to him, well, why did you come so close to the city? Why did you come so close to the wall and let so many men be killed? Then just say to him, Uriah the Hittite is dead also. This will pacify him. This he'll be satisfied with. This is what he'll be pleased with. How awful, my hearers. How awful this is. David, who loved every one of his soldiers, who was a praying man when he was at war, that he would be glad to hear that his soldiers and Uriah the Hittite was dead. Even this messenger was surprised when he heard this from Joab's lips. This was something unusual. Anyway, the messenger went back to David and explained to him just how the war had progressed and what had taken place, and how that some of the servants of David had fallen, and that Uriah the Hittite, he also had fallen. Well, David says, go back and speak to my servant Joab and tell him that he shouldn't be disturbed about this. The sword taketh the one as well as the other. Tell him to make the battle hotter and tell him to take in the city. See the state of the mind of David at this present time. When he received this word of his servants being killed with Uriah the Hittite, it pleased him. Inwardly, he was satisfied with this. This was entirely different than the way it had been. And usually when something like this happened, David received this as a rebuke of God, and he went into his inner chamber, and he got on his knees, and he asked God why that God let some of his servants be killed. What had God against them? But David didn't do this time. See where his mind was and his heart was? And now we find that this, what was done to Uriah the Hittite, was brought back to his wife. And now his wife, she became a widow. And she came into a state of mourning. She mourned because of the loss of her husband. Whether this was truthful, whether this was with her heart, we cannot say. And how long that she mourned, the Bible doesn't say either. But when the mourning time was past, David fetched her to his house, and he married her, and she became his wife, and she gave birth unto a child. But the thing that David had done displeased the Lord. David, in this way, covered himself up from all these sins which he had committed, but he could not cover himself in the sight of God. For God was displeased with this. He had caused this man, Uriah the Hittite, to lose his life. This man, David, was guilty of a